Picking up from where we left off, another person has written in saying, "Howdy, Daryl. I'm new to these non-dual teachings and ideas, but of all the spiritual stuff I've come across, and that's not much really, non-duality seems to make the most sense. I've also found your expression of it much clearer and more consistent than others. That said, I have a question that's been lingering. A lot of teachers and authors seem to emphasize suffering and how our identification with the separate self generates suffering. What I don't get is why the need to focus on suffering at all. Ultimately, isn't suffering just another appearance? Is it really any different from the feeling of watching paint dry? As you say, it's all an inexplicable happening, and it seems that the only difference is the way that the happening is being interpreted. It's like there is this pulsing dance, and the first, and in one situation it's interpreted as suffering, and in another situation it's interpreted as the feeling of watching paint dry. In the end, isn't it all just, as you say, an indefinable happening? It seems to me that a lot of teachers are inconsistent with their message. On the one hand, they say there is no good or bad or that everything is perfect, and in the same breath, they talk about suffering as if to imply that the suffering is not actually part of the great perfection. What are your thoughts? Is there really something special about suffering that justifies so much emphasis? I really appreciate you taking the time to entertain these questions and comments. Thanks, and Blix, Flute, and Wazzle." So again, with these questions, we're getting into some of the subtleties of this awakening process, this apparent awakening process. Yes, in my perspective, this is a totally unexplainable happening. That's all there ever is, a totally unexplainable happening, and it's happening automatically. Again, within these non-dual teachings, they're simply pointing out that there's a big illusion in existence. And the illusion is that existence has form, or basically it's that existence has a describable form. And so within many of the ancient expressions of this perspective, they say there is the impression that existence has name and form, and all they mean by that is that there is the impression that existence has a describable form, and that there's some way of describing that form in an ultimately true way. These non-dual expressions are saying that that's an illusion, that there is something describable here, that there is an actual form occurring here. And so these non-dual perspectives point out the fact that we already have the impression everything is changing. And we know that when this event first presents itself, or first seems to present itself, there isn't any storyline that comes with it. It's simply a totally mysterious event. It's always a totally mysterious event. So, quite obviously, for a baby, an apparent baby that's 1 hour old, there is no storyline for existence. And that whatever storyline we seem to have as an adult, within our usual sense of existence, there's the impression that we've been trained to say these things. We've been trained to use these labels, and we've been trained to describe life in this way. It's not something that we're born with. It's something that's made up once this event presents itself. It's something that comes along later in the apparent movement of this event. So ultimately, these non-dual perspectives are simply saying, look, just wake up to the fact that life doesn't have any describable form, that there are no things, there are no stable things anywhere. Every so-called thing in life is simply an action, a dynamic, an event, a flowing, a moving, a shifting, a dancing. That that's all there is. And so at some point, I mean, we can say that that action occurs automatically, but we don't even have to say that, because it's just that action is action. It is flowing. It's not that the flowing is occurring automatically. It's that there is only flowing. There is only action. That's all there ever is. And so from this non-dual perspective, that's a totally unexplainable happening, simply happening. And so, yes, ultimately, it can't really be described as suffering. It can't really be described as watching paint drying. There's no way of saying ultimately what it is. However, once there is an acknowledgement of this event, there has to be the acknowledgement that whatever it seems to be is a legitimate expression of this event. So there are apparent people who will focus on what we call suffering. And even within this non-dual perspective, they will begin to approach the perspective through this aspect of suffering. They will simply start saying to people that, have you ever noticed that everything is changing? And that if we try to control that changing, if we try to stop that changing, if we try to repress that changing, that we're frustrated, and ultimately that gives rise to a certain amount of suffering. Now that's their natural expression. It's their natural way to approach this event of life through that aspect. And they will often give a reason for that as being, it's the quickest way for people to begin to relate to these teachings, because it's very obvious that within our lives we have a certain amount of suffering. So Buddhism is one of the ways that, or Buddhism uses this notion of suffering as a lead-in to this mysterious event of life. Because it's a very easy thing for most people to relate to. Most people have the feeling that they're suffering, and most people have the urge to get rid of that suffering. And so it becomes a very natural lead-in point to consider this event of life and what's actually going on. However, for some, it will apparently come to this situation where even the notion of explaining life in terms of suffering is a fantasy and unnecessary. It's unnecessary to focus on that as some kind of primary explanation of existence. It's different for everyone. In some, it's just a subtle difference to some others, some apparent others. And for some, it's a radical difference. However, within this event of life, all of these expressions are legitimate. And it's not a matter of what's the right expression as opposed to what's the wrong expression. It's simply, what's your expression? Everyone else has their legitimate expression. You have your legitimate expression. It's not a matter of one being right and one being wrong. It's just, what do you relate to? What is your expression? Now, the last portion of this person's questions, they ask for my thoughts, and they ask if I think there is really something special about suffering that justifies so much emphasis. And no, I don't see anything so special about suffering that justifies this emphasis. I mean, my own inclination is simply to point to our common experience of life and to point to the fallacies of any explanation of existence. And I don't start out with the notion that we're going to overcome a certain amount of suffering through this perspective. I start out just wondering if anyone relates to our common experience that everything is changing, moving, shifting, dancing, that everything is ultimately unexplainable. One of the things that will come up from this initial approach to suffering, by starting out with this notion of suffering, is that often people get the impression that they're going to overcome all hardship in existence. If they just have an awakening, a realization, they're going to overcome what we would call hardship, all hardship. And that's not really what's being offered here, even with this sense of suffering. The suffering that they're pointing to is not it's not the general hardship of life. It's what you would call a mental anguish. And it's a mental anguish that occurs when there isn't an apparently clear seeing of life. However, in presenting this notion of mental anguish and suffering, it often gives rise to the feeling that this can go on forever, and that for everyone there's the potential of overcoming all mental confusion, all hardship. And that's not what's being offered here. You know, in those that express many of these teachings from this initial aspect of suffering, they're simply saying, let's have a look at this situation of suffering and let's just see what's possible here. Let's explore this. Let's see where suffering or hardship is necessary and where it might not be necessary. And if you're drawn to that approach, that's great. If you're not drawn to that approach, it's really, I mean, we would say useless to you. There'll be some other approach to life that seems to be presented somewhere else, and you may relate to that in a larger way. However, there's nothing wrong in any of this expression. All of it is ultimately totally unexplainable. It's not a teacher talking about suffering. And it's not a bunch of students relating to suffering. That's not what's actually happening. Again, it's ultimately a totally unexplainable event, simply happening the way it happens. And these stories about teachers presenting spiritual teachings in a number of different ways, those are false. That's not what's happening here. And these stories of students awakening, having some realization, moving to enlightenment, that's not what's happening here. Those stories are ultimately false. This is always a totally unexplainable happening, a totally unexplainable dynamic or action or functioning, a totally inexplicable dance. Okay, another person has written in saying, just felt compelled to drop you a quick line and let you know how much I enjoyed your question and answer segment. I love the simplicity. Is there any acknowledgement in your experience that what we hold as truths or what we believe adds complexity, like creating what appears to be cause and effect? And yes, absolutely. really a huge aspect of this non-dual perspective is the sense of simplicity as opposed to complexity. So if the focus goes on the storylines, if there is a belief in the storyline, it is the natural expression of thought to become more and more complex. The whole process of thinking is dividing the event of this moment into more and more discernible forms, and to describe those apparent forms in more and more detail. So it's a movement towards increasing complexity. Whereas with the non-dual perspective, it's just a simple acknowledgement that all of that is an automatic movement, an automatic action. There is only that. It is an action. That's all that's occurring here. There is a dynamic. There is a function that is occurring. It's not a stable thing. It's a moving, shifting, dancing event. And it has no explanation whatsoever, ultimately. So from this non-dual perspective, there is the very simple acknowledgement of action. That's all that exists. And that action is the apparent movement of thought. It is the apparent growing older of bodies. It is the apparent movement of the universe. It is the apparent pulsation, vibration, the mooding, the seeing, the hearing, the touching, the tasting, the smelling. All of that is simply an unexplainable action. If we make no attempt to describe it or explain it, it happens anyway. And even if we don't want any thoughts, they happen anyway. They're an action. They're a dynamic function, an event, a flowing. So in that acknowledgement of this very fundamental action, unexplainable action, there is an incredible simplicity, whereas if there is belief in the description and belief in the idea of forms that can be described, then there is an ever-growing complexity. So words are apparently needed in our day-to-day activities, in our daily functioning. But beyond a certain point, they actually become troublesome, because they don't really explain what's going on here. And they have this apparent quality of increasing complexity. And in that increasing complexity is increasing confusion and increasing contradiction. Because as it increasingly describes form, it increasingly becomes more frustrating, because life has no apparent form. Life has no actual form. It has an apparent form, I should say, but it has no actual form. And so the more and more we focus on descriptions of form and the notion of form, it becomes increasingly more complex and increasingly more frustrating. But all of that is a totally mysterious event. And it will play out in whatever way it plays out. In some apparent people, there is a questioning of what's going on. There may be the arising of a so-called non-dual perspective. And in others, it doesn't express itself in that way. All of it is a totally unexplainable event, simply doing what it does. Okay, we've had another person write in and expressed a number of different questions throughout the month, and then At the very end of the month, this person has written in saying, "I've just been rereading your book, Dismantling the Fantasy, and realized that it effectively answers all my questions and any other questions I could conceivably pose. To be honest, a part of me knew that already. However, I've enjoyed composing the emails I've written so far, and it could be that other visitors to your site will benefit from having them answered. Even the most fundamental question, such as, why does anything exist at all, or why is there something rather than nothing, is just meaningless noise, part of the inexplicable stream of life. Best wishes." So, the earlier questions that this person posed, and it was more than just questions, this person was expressing certain feelings that he was having regarding other teachers. I mean, he first wrote in saying that he was reading a particular teacher's recent book and was feeling a very strong emotional reaction to that. This teacher, it seems, was talking about the traps and pitfalls of enlightenment, how they have to be avoided, worked through, and it was exhausting this person to read about it. His gut reaction was that it was the same old Protestant self-improvement ethic just asserting itself in the field of spirituality. And he knew he was, you know, this person who wrote in knew he was getting on a bit of a rant. And he was actually getting annoyed with the person who had written the book that he was reading, saying that it was, you know, why are they doing this to us? Like, why do they first of all tell us that everything is perfect and then tell us that we have to work day to day to improve ourselves, that we constantly got to overcome what we are, when on another page they're telling us that it's all perfect to begin with? So there was that kind of response to some of the ways that these teachings are expressed. And in this expression of his, he was also expressing just the irritation at the confusion of all of this. And he's kind of wondering, like, why is it that teachers present these apparently conflicting messages? And ultimately, from my perspective, there's no way of explaining this. Everyone is a legitimate expression of existence. And everyone has to be the expression that they are in any particular moment. So I know that a lot of teachers will present a non-dual perspective mixed in with a worldly perspective. And that seems to be their most natural way of expressing all of this. And so within their expression, they're simply using what would be considered practical or supportive worldly views mixed in ultimately with this non-dual perspective, which says that all worldly views are false and there is just this great perfection, this great mysterious dance of existence. And so in that mixed presentation, they're simply saying, look, if you relate to these practical worldly views, which can be supportive to some degree, that's great. If, however, you relate to this larger non-dual perspective, the sense of the great event of existence simply moving and shifting and dancing on its own, and that there is no explanation for that, that's great too. So they're simply saying, here's a whole bunch of perspectives, and relate to the one that seems most appropriate to you. However, it's also the case that within that situation, those that do relate to this larger event and are initially relating to this larger mysterious event of existence. Those that are initially relating to what might be called a non-dual perspective, they will find this situation incredibly confusing. And there's no way around that, because they're looking to this teacher to resolve the conflict. They're looking to this teacher to ultimately say what it is you should believe and not believe. And it can't work that way. Ultimately, it's the event of existence itself that has to supply the certainty of a non-dual perspective. Eventually, it's your experience of life that has to back up what your sense of life actually is. And so if you're looking for someone else to offer you a totally consistent picture, if you're looking for someone else to offer you the perspective that you can relate to, it's not ultimately going to work. Obviously, it's not going to work in this situation where someone's presenting a mixed bag of perspectives, but it's also the case that even when someone is expressing a very consistent non-dual expression, their particular words, the words that they use, it's unlikely that those words will be the ones that are exactly the ones that you would use. Because your sense of existence has to be somewhat different to absolutely everyone else. Because, again, if we look around at the various apparent expressions of nature, each one is unique. So, you know, as we initially begin to relate to this non-dual perspective and it makes more and more sense to us, these questions can come up about, you know, well, why does this teacher talk about it in these worldly ways? And, you know, why are they saying one moment we're being danced by the universe and then in the next moment they're telling us that we have to work diligently to overcome all of our defilements? And it's simply the fact that there are certain expressions of life, certain apparent people that have this non-dual perspective. They see life ultimately as this unexplainable happening or functioning, but it is their own particular expression that has an interest in perhaps refining their behavior in a certain way. And that's a legitimate expression of existence. Some people have a non-dual perspective and they want to look at the way they speak to others, apparently speak to others, and the way they apparently behave. And there is an urge or a focus on speech and action and an apparent interest in refined speech and refined action. It's not their doing, but that is their expression. Now, others will have a non-dual sensibility, and they won't have any interest in that kind of focus. Maybe they'll want to go fishing instead. Maybe they'll want to avoid the whole worldly situation. There are, you know, what we call recluses, and it may be that someone has a non-dual perspective and is very reclusive. Within this realm of non-duality, among all the apparent non-dual teachers, there's a wide range of expression, and all of it is legitimate. The question isn't what's the right expression and what's the wrong expression. The question is, what's your unique expression? And you don't even have to consider that, because in each and every moment, you are your unique expression. You are the unique expression of existence. Now, in a subsequent email, this same person has written in expressing a feeling of irritation at the deluded way we're conditioned in our society to think about free will and the responsibility for one's actions. And as he writes, I could cite 1,000 examples where we're encouraged to condemn people for their behavior, hold them responsible, punish them, etc., etc. And he also says, now, of course, you could say that the insights that you provide in your talks aren't meant to be used this way. They're not meant to make us feel superior or sneer at people who just don't get it. Nevertheless, this happens. And it's another totally inexplicable happening. Why fight it? Indeed, why not fight it? Doesn't the whole thing blow up into a kind of absurdity? Is that what's meant to happen, perhaps? We can't blame anybody, and we can't blame ourselves for blaming them. In the final analysis, don't you end up in the same place as John C. Parkin, author of Fuck It, The Ultimate Spiritual Way? He claims that after going through the spirituality mill, this is the conclusion he came to. Maybe he has a point, and maybe the existentialists had a point when they emphasized the absurdity of life. So, I mean, this is great because we're getting away from all of this crap that usually surrounds the world of spirituality, where everything is going to be bliss. With this awakening, everything is going to be perfect and bliss-filled, and it's going to be no more confusion. And it's not the case. I mean, even with this awakening, and in this so-called awakening process, there are all kinds of emotional upheavals, and initially there can be this sense of, you know, this is kind of a rip-off that people have conditioned us to think in certain ways, and we can get irritated with society in general. So initially, there can be all kinds of emotional arisings in relation to this awakening to a non-dual perspective. I've had lots of people say they're kind of ticked off that it took them so long to get to have this realization that they spent a lifetime lost in all of these storylines, and then in their 60s and 70s they awaken to the fact that all of these storylines are false, that they're just a misinterpretation of existence. And then they get upset that it took them so long to come to this realization. And it takes it doesn't take long, but eventually there's the realization that, oh yeah, it never was me in charge of this. So this initial sense of being upset about it, or this initial sense of being irritated with the rest of existence, if we're really expressed with a non-dual sensibility, these irritations will fall away. But the fact of the matter is, the apparent awakening process will sometimes manifest these apparent irritations and aggravations and grudges, which is great because, to talk about this stuff, to consider this, it gets away from these generalized statements about how we're moving to endless bliss, or there's just endless peace and endless rest. And it's not true. Life continues to express itself in a shifting, moving, dancing way, but overall, there's a lack of concern over how it's going to present itself because it's unavoidable. There is only this dance of life. Now again, this same person sent in a further email at another point saying, I think there is a distinction between the minimalist, hardcore style of teaching on one hand and those who in one breath are saying that you're God and therefore perfect, and in the next breath seems to be wagging a finger at you and exhorting you to do this, that, and the other. It's almost as though the latter teachers see this as a mark of their spiritual maturity. They don't want to upset the apple cart of conventional society too much, perhaps. or they see dangers in people getting above themselves. So, once again, as we apparently awaken to this non-dual sensibility, to the great mysterious event of existence, in this apparent awakening process, there can be these expressions, these ideas of being upset or irritated by other teachers or by a number of teachers who haven't seemed to have expressed this as clearly as we would have wanted them to. And all of this is legitimate. You know, a legitimate aggravation arising in this so-called awakening process. The process itself is a legitimate expression of existence. The so-called irritations and aggravations and emotional upheavals that sometimes accompany this apparent awakening, those are all legitimate expressions of it. However, in this, in being expressed with a non-dual sensibility, eventually this irritation will settle out because it becomes obvious that each and every apparent human being has to be exactly what they are in any moment. And none of it is explainable. It's all just a totally unexplainable event presenting itself, expressing itself. So, with these irritations, there's still a certain amount of emphasis on thought, on explanation, on hoping to explain life in some clear way. And since there's still a certain amount of focus on the world of thought, it comes up very naturally with these condemnations of teachers who haven't apparently expressed this in a clear way. Or it comes up with an aggravation over a society that condemns people for free will and punishes them for punishes them because they feel they have the right to punish them, because they believe in this idea of free will and somebody hasn't used their free will properly, so those people need to be punished, when in fact people simply have to be whatever they're expressed as by nature, or however they are apparently expressed in this larger mysterious event of existence. So as there is this initial awakening to the larger unexplainable happening of existence, there is still apparently a certain amount of focus on the storyline, and the storylines start jumping around, and one storyline gets replaced by another storyline, and it takes a while before the realization that all of these storylines are false, that none of these storylines apply. And so for those that are truly expressed in a non-dual way, an apparent non-dual sensibility, there is a settling into the fact that no story applies. It is all simply a totally inexplicable happening. And so even though this person has written in a number of times during the month with all of these irritations and confusions and aggravations, eventually what he has written is that it's all just meaningless noise. Even the most fundamental question is just a meaningless noise, part of the inexplicable stream of life. So this is a very realistic expression of this process of awakening. It's not just you have a realization and everything is bliss-filled. There's a growing realization of a totally inexplicable event. And in that growing realization, a growing sensibility that life is totally unexplainable, in that there can be all kinds of apparent irritations and confusions and aggravations that arise before it kind of settles out into a sense that, you know, well, who knows what this is? Whatever it is, it's doing its thing. There's no way of saying what it's doing. There's no way of explaining it. It just is what it is, and everything is simply expressed the way it's expressed. Okay, last but not least, someone has written in saying, "Hi, Daryl. My first language is not English, so if you have trouble understanding, then please let me know, and I then try to express this more accurate. Could you talk a little more about so-called oneness or unity experience? I've been having these experiences over 2 years now and always assumed that when this non-dual view is seen clearly enough, then this oneness experience stays. So far, it has been a roller coaster ride between unity and apparent separation. So I guess my question is, what is causing this oscillation? From reading your books and listening to your talks, I've got the impression that there is no final seeing or understanding, and this oscillation is also an expression of nature. I think you said something like that in your Conscious TV interview. I have read many, many, many non-dual books from several authors and found your expression to be the most liberating. And nowadays, I don't worry about these kinds of questions so much, but I am very curious about it. Thank you, Daryl, so much, and sorry about the last-minute question. Best wishes." Yeah, this question came in the last, in the very last portion of the month. So, yes, for many, there are these experiences, these holistic experiences, this experience of everything being one great event. And in that, usually all thought falls away. And there is just a very strong impression that life is undivided. And so, you know, traditionally, this is known as mystical experience. It's you know, people refer to it in a number of different ways. You could call it an undifferentiated state. So it's a state of mind, an apparent state of consciousness that is not divided up. And most people who have this experience have the impression that they can't really explain it to another human being because there's no way to explain it. It's an actual experience that can't really be explained, and it's so radically different from the usual feeling of being separated from life that it's just beyond expression. And actually, a lot of them are just left feeling that there isn't any way to explain it. And for many, there is this flip-flop between this undifferentiated state, this feeling that life is one big ocean moving and shifting, and those other moments where we feel very much like we're somebody separate from existence. Now, in general, someone who is experiencing these two different experiences find them to be radically different. So they will have a strong belief in thought and a strong belief in the stories of thought, usually, but then they will have an actual experience of thought falling away, and the moment is experienced as one event. But initially, usually, what apparently happens in this is that there's an urge to explain that unified event, that feeling that life is one big ocean, one big event. There's an excitement about that, and there's an urge to identify that state and an urge to explain it because there's still a lot of focus and a lot of on thought. There's a belief that thought can explain what's going on here. So normally we walk around, we're lost in the world of thought, we explain everything, and we believe that those explanations are true. Now, in certain apparent people, that thought event can fall away, and there is just a radical experience of life being one big event. There's usually an excitement that arises with that, and so the excitement around it gives rise to a desire to explain what's going on, to figure out what's going on, and so the focus goes back on the world of thought, and that destroys the feeling that life is one big event. And for those who experience these two radically different expressions of existence, for those who are expressed in this way, there can be a great deal of confusion and a great deal of frustration because they essentially want to explain this unified experience, this experience of wholeness. They want to explain that. And the focus always goes back to the explanation, and therefore it comes off the experience of life being one unexplainable event. So there's a great deal of frustration in that kind of flip-flop. As long as there's an urge to explain life and to focus intently on thought as our main way to relate to reality, there will be this frustration. In some cases, certain apparent people will come to realize that within a special set of circumstances, they can allow thought to fall away and experience this wholeness more and more. So they go off on long retreats, but they never actually look at how much of a focus they have on the world of thought. They're more interested in dispelling thought, in letting thought fall away in order to experience this wholeness. And so the relationship with thought is an antagonistic relationship. There is a feeling that thought is somehow the enemy, and there is an urge to get rid of the thought in order to feel this larger, unexplainable event of life. And in that, there's a great difficulty, because thought is a natural expression of the event. And it's not that we have to get rid of thought to move to an ongoing acknowledgement of the larger event of life. It's that we have to come to realize, or we may come to realize. It's not that we have to come to realize. No one has to be anything in particular other than what nature expresses you as. There isn't any standard for human beings to reach. There isn't any standard for a non-dual perspective to reach. But it may be that there is a realization that it's not that we have to get rid of thought, but we come to question what it is that thought actually is doing. And when we realize that it's not actually explaining existence, there may be the realization that thought itself is simply a movement of this larger event, so that the focus a lot of the time is no longer going on the story of thought, but it's going on the movement of thought. And in that, there is no longer any attempt to get rid of thought. It's a simple acknowledgement that thought is coming and going on its own, like the clouds in the sky. And that we don't have to be worried about that. We don't have to be concerned about that. Thoughts come and go like the clouds in the sky. Moods come and go like the clouds in the sky. Everything in the moment is moving and shifting on its own. Even when thought is present, the event of the moment is a totally unexplainable event, simply moving and shifting on its own. And in that, there is an acknowledgement of the dance of life that includes everything that life is expressing. It's no longer trying to exclude anything. It's no longer making anything an enemy. There are things we need to be concerned about in relation to our basic survival, and all of that occurs automatically. But there is this larger realization that everything in the moment is a legitimate dance of a totally unexplainable happening. And so, in that subtle shift of focus regarding thought, so that the focus is not on the explanations that thought presents, but the focus is a simple acknowledgement of the movement that thought is. And the fact that thinking is a totally unexplainable happening on its own, in that, the focus can kind of dance into the explanations and out of the explanations to the larger event, apparently. And underlying all of that dance is the acknowledgement that all of it is a totally unexplainable happening, simply happening. That no one's in charge of that. That thought does not destroy that event. Thinking does not destroy the larger mysterious dance of existence. Thinking is simply one small part of that larger mysterious dance. And that it's always a totally unexplainable happening. So I don't know if these comments are of any support in any way. Again, let me emphasize that any of the explanations I offer here, any of the comments that I offer here, they are not an ultimate explanation of existence. I'm simply entering the storylines that we all have. And by entering the storylines that we all have, I begin to point to the fact that these storylines do not ultimately explain what's happening here. And that if we try to find an explanation in those storylines, if we try to resolve our difficulties in an explanation of existence, we get frustrated because ultimately life can't be explained. It is a totally mysterious event expressing itself. In this moment, if we do nothing at all, life will continue to express itself. The process that we are, if we make no effort at all, it will express itself. The apparent body and mind that we are will be expressed. They are simply the dance of existence. The apparent needs, interests, and concerns that we are, the apparent abilities and lack of abilities that we are, will continue, even if we simply rest. There will be an urge to function in some way, because all of life is this action. It is this compelled expression. All of it a totally mysterious event. So in these questions and responses to the questions, it's simply a consideration of what our storylines are, what our actual experience is, and the fact that our actual experience, what we say is our experience, does not back up the storylines. There is no way of saying what any of this is. And as always, this is only for your consideration. I'm not asking anyone to view life in this way. This is one of the ways that life expresses itself. This non-dual sensibilities is not the one true way of looking at existence. It's just one of the mysterious expressions of existence. And all of what's offered here is simply for your consideration. If you relate to it, that's wonderful. If you don't relate to it, that's just as wonderful. Each and every expression of existence is a totally legitimate expression of existence. So, that's it, folks. Until next time, take care. Bye.